No, no, no. She's not a medical doctor, but she can sure cure your tax problems or your financial woes. She's the how-to girl. It's the Dr. Friday Show. If you have a question for Dr. Friday, call her now, 737-WWTN. That's 737-9986. So here's your host, financial counselor and tax consultant, Dr. Friday.
G'day, I'm Dr. Friday, and the doctor is in the house this beautiful Saturday afternoon. And we're going to cover a couple things that we need to prepare for. I've gotten quite a few phone calls with individuals either selling real estate or inheriting real estate and selling that real estate and wanting to know a little bit more about what the exclusion or thresholds for capital gains. Had someone call me and thought that if their income was below a certain dollar amount, which it's $47,025 or less for individuals, if they would be at the 0% capital gains. But the one thing that you have to remember in that conversation, that would have to include your capital gains. So if your total income, including your capital gains, is under $47,025 for an individual, then you will not pay any tax on that capital gains. But if that is just your normal income and then you have $50,000 or whatever of capital gains, now you're in a different situation. You're looking at 15% roughly. And again, when people are quoting capital gains rates, whenever I'm looking at the ones on the internet or whatever, they always seem to miss that 3.8 of investment tax that we have. Anyone that makes any individual over 200, any married couple over 250. So what you'll see is 15% from the 47,000 up to 518, and then above that 518, it goes to 20%. And if you're looking totally at the fact that capital gains tax, the term capital gains tax, that is true, but we have an investment tax and that kicks in for anyone that has investments that exceed 200 or 250, depending if you're married or single. And that kicks in again. So even though you don't pay the 20% until after 518 for an individual, you do pay 18.8, anything above 250 for a married couple or 200 for a single individual. So that is one of those areas where, yes, I mean, technically you can say capital gains tax or rates are these, but there is that other one and it can make a big difference. It's almost 4%, especially if you're on the higher end of those numbers and you're calculating that you're only going to pay 15 and then your tax person comes up with 18.8, you didn't set enough taxes aside to offset it. Now you're not going to be happy. So just making sure you understand how that works. And then of course, with the inherited side of things, we also have what's called a step up in basis. You want to make sure that you have proper appraisals, basically, is obviously the best way to go, but at least comps or something like that that will help you understand how much the value of that piece of real estate you either inherited. And there's a huge difference, everyone, between inherited and gifted. If your parents just signed over their house to you while they were still alive, because normally the biggest fear is they don't want to lose it into healthcare, right? As we get older, we're worried that we're end up in a Medicare situation maybe, and they just don't want to lose the house. It's their biggest asset. They're always afraid. So they add their children and basically quick claim it to them. That is not the world's greatest idea. Just sharing with you from the attorney side, I'm not an attorney. I'm only talking from the tax side. But even from the tax side, Medicare has a five-year look back, and they also have the ability of asking, have you ever transferred assets over during this time period? And I've been told that they actually ask that for bigger periods, not just the 5 years. But I'm not an expert on this. But from the tax standpoint, if you do it now and 20 years later, your parents end up in a situation where they are not having to worry about, if they went to housing or Medicare, that's fine. But you've also missed out on the step up in basis. So if it's 20 years later or 10 years later and now the house is available to sell, then, you would have to pay the capital gains other than what the basis, and the basis is what your parents paid for that house. And that's a very hard thing to prove in some ways too, because a lot of times people are sitting there going, well, I don't know what my parents paid for the house. All you can do is go back. And in many cases, property taxes are the only thing we have to rule from, because the parents or the grandparents actually built the house. So there wasn't like a closing or something that we might be able to track down. In most cases, they purchased the dirt and then they built the houses on it. So you're going to end up with the lowest dollar amount. And if you can't justify anything, then you're going to end up with a zero basis. And I've seen that happen. So you pay capital gains on all the money that you might get from that property. So very important to establish that basis, not to just quit claim. And there are ways of shielding property to a point. Again, I would definitely suggest an estate attorney, Russ Cook, Jack McCann, any of those guys that really do a great job in helping us shield what we can and what, you know, and sometimes you think you're shielding something and you find out it doesn't happen. If you want to join the show, you can at 615-737-9986, 615-737-9986, taking your calls, talking about taxes. We have two things going. Obviously, we still have the 2023 tax returns being completed. Individuals have until October 15th. Businesses, partnerships, corporations, they have until September 15th. So sooner versus later, you want to get those numbers done. You can't really do your personal unless you've done the business returns, because we have to have those K-1s to process the personal tax return. So again, capital gains is something a lot of people, you still have the health savings accounts. Those are still wonderful. The annual contribution is somewhere between, for individuals, about $4,150 with the maximum out of pocket of about $550. And then for families, you can put in $8,350. And that's pretty good. Think about it. Many of us are blessed to the point that, you know, you want to be using your health savings account when you don't need to be using it. So every year, just like adding to your retirement, you would add the $4,000 or the $8,000 if you're married or single to that account, and you may not use it. But that's the whole point. You don't use your IRAs, you don't use, and then that number can accumulate. And then when you really do have some need, or when you get over the age of 65, you can no longer contribute once you're on Medicare, but you can spend those funds to help you make it through those times when Medicare or the secondary insurance or whatever may not cover the procedures. It, we have a tax-free account basically that you can spend for medical. And then when you pass away, it basically turns into an IRA. In fact, at 73, you have to start taking RMDs from your HSA because it is considered basically a deferred account. So when you're looking at all your deferred earnings and all that, that's kind of important to understand. Right now, the family member dies in 2024. The basic exclusion is $13.6 million. That means that most of us won't have to worry about estate tax or inheritance tax. And you can actually gift family members $18,000 this year, 2024, went from 17 to 18. So that is a very nice increase. And that you don't, if it's 18 or less, you do not have to file any kind of gift tax returns. Now, it doesn't mean that you cannot gift somebody more money. It happens all the time. A lot of people help their children with down payments on their homes, do estate planning with different situations. But then you do need to file a gift tax return, just documenting the importance of that money and where it's going, and you know, taking it from your lifetime contribution. So that is kind of an important situation. If you are buying or looking at the electric cars and they qualify, because it has to be an EV, there still is the $7,500 exclusion. Had a case last year in 2023 where one of mine did go and buy, but they claimed it's one of those situations where I guess it was more, it wasn't a full EV, even though that wasn't what they thought they were buying. IRS requires you to come back in certain situations. So make sure you get the proper documents. That's what I'm going to say. The documents have to show what kind of vehicle. It has to have the FIN number on it, has all the details. And if that boxes are checked as used or something else, and it isn't, that was the problem we had with this one, then, you know, again, it comes back down to if it's not a used vehicle, it shouldn't say used, and therefore you get the full credit. In this case, it did say used and it wasn't, but we're still having to get the car lot to make the proper adjustments to that situation. So you have all the important things you want on that. In 2024, taxpayers can increase their contributions, take advantage of tax savings. The contributions for employees for a 401k or 403b increased to $23,000, up from $22,500. And over the age of 50, you can add an additional $7,500. So that would be $30,500 can be deferred into your IRA. Into your 401k. An IRA in 2024 is $7,000. And if you're over the age of 50, it's $8,000. That's an increase from $65,000 to $7,500. So those are important numbers. Certain standard deductions obviously have changed. Those are always fluctuating. But basically, for example, the maximum credit for an adoption this year is up to $16,810. That's up from $15,900. And keep in mind, if you do adopt and you don't use all that money in the first year, because some of it doesn't always require full credit. It's some of it's a deduction. It will roll over to the next year. I've had a number of people who will be able to take advantage of that. Earned income credits have increased. So if you are a single person and you have one dependent, you can collect up to the limit for that. Married filing jointly is $56,000. A head of household or single person, $49,000, and you still qualify. Maximum credit is $4,213. For two kids, it's $6,960. Maximum credit, the income is $55,700, and married couples $62,688. Three or more, they do go up to three or more still, $7,830. So again, but those are all based totally on basic income that you're earning. Head of household or single, obviously you have a lot more than a married couple able to basically earn. All right, so we're getting ready to take our first break. If you want to join the show, you can, 615-737-9986, 615-737-9986. We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we'll get some of your questions and phone calls. We'll be right back.
Your Money Coach with Dr. Friday will return in a moment on Super Talk 99.7 WTN.
All righty, we are back here live in studio. And if you want to join the show, you can, 615-737-9986, 615-737-9986. We're still running through some of the changes. We're halfway through 24, so some of this information is going to be vital for you, especially if you're trying to calculate your tax brackets or your standard deductions. So again, everything usually increases from one year to the next. So 23 standard deduction was $13,850 for a single. Now it's going to be $14,600. Married couples were $27,700. Now we're at $29,200. Head of household $20,800, going up to $21,900. So that is basically, if you make, as a single person, if you make $14,600 on a W-2 or anything, basically for ordinary income tax, you will pay zero ordinary income. Now, if you're self-employed, we'll still pay our self-employment tax. But that is kind of the important part of that question. And also, when I was giving those numbers for capital gains, it was actually subtracting. So when I said 47,000 and some change that you could actually have 47,25, you would add, if you were married or single or whatever, you would add your standard deduction to those numbers. So that way it's almost 50,000, 55,000 you can have tax-free before you actually end up with any capital gains in those. And the same thing, almost double that first for a married couple. So again, there is always these little twists and turns that you want to make sure you add. If you're actually over the age of 65, you're going to add another $1,500. So here's a question that had come in, and I thought it was an interesting one, because a lot of times, or many times, I have clients that are grandparents that are actually raising their grandchildren due to other reasons and things that have happened in life. And one of the things that you find out very quickly, and unfortunately, this is kind of the bad news, but from age 25 to 65, you can qualify for earned income credits. Repeat, 25 to 65. After that, you do, or before that. So if you're a 21-year-old out on your own with a child, you can, I mean, in most cases, it's difficult to qualify for the earned income credit. Now, there are some ways around that as a younger person, but over the age of 65, I have not yet found a way to justify the fact that you are earning income, reporting a child that's under the age and you're supporting that person. They don't allow us to claim that earned income credit. So that's kind of important to know, especially if you're a senior thinking, hey, I'll get the credit, you know, that I can take this deduction and I'll get that $4,000 earned income credit. For that dependent, you might not qualify. So again, making sure you understand how the tax law works is always the best way before you go. And then you file something and you're thinking, oh, wow, I got this covered. And next thing you find out, it's not what you thought it was. And now in some cases, people have kind of counted their chickens before they hatched, as my grandmother used to say. And, you know, they've already spent the money thinking, oh, we're going to get $4,000, $6,000, or $8,000 because we have children in the house and you don't qualify for them. So very important to make sure that you understand how the tax law is going to work. So that way you can make sure you're in the right position to do what you need to do. So that was one of those questions where this grandparent is over the age of 65 and wondered why they didn't qualify. And that is why right now tax law doesn't allow that. So if you are a senior and you're raising your grandchildren, well, first, congratulations. Second, that's a difficult position, but you're not going to have a lot of tax help other than the regular child credit that you would qualify for. Tax brackets, kind of important to understand your tax bracket. But when I say tax bracket, there is your actual tax bracket, and then there's the marginal tax rate. Marginal is more the important number because you could be in the 32% tax bracket, but maybe only paying 26% tax, because we have a progressive tax code, right? So we go from 0, 1, 2, 3, 4%. Our percentages work their way up. We start at basically, once you get through the zero, we jump to 10%. But again, I have people that pay maybe 6% or 4% tax overall with all the way it works. So the top tax bracket we have right now is 37%. A single person would have to be making more than $609,000 to be paying it. And here's where the marriage penalty, I mean, you guys have heard capital gains, what I say about that one, $200,000 for an individual, $250,000 for a married couple. Here you go. Again, tax brackets, $609,000 for a single. At the top bracket, $731,000 for a married couple. The tax really gets hit right there. You start feeling it a little bit more. It's pretty even, pretty much the up to 24 and then 32. But after that, you basically are start getting into a little bit the 35 basically, but 37, definitely a marriage penalty on those kind of situations. No easy way around that. Sorry to say, if you have two very successful individuals, marriage is not always the best thing in those conversations, but you can maximize some of your tax deductions by, you know, making certain investments, deferring certain incomes. That's the game we all want to play. So that way we make sure we have enough when we get ready to retire. All right. So if you want to join the show, you can 615-737-9986, 615-737-9986. So I'm working on a case right now where a gentleman, his grandfather passed away and his father. So he now inherited the house that and was full of all kinds of things, right? All kinds of clothing, furniture. And so he was detailed. He went through and put everything, listed it, put the product and all the things. But one of the things that they've come back, and it added up to like $84,000 that he gave to Goodwill. And the IRS has disallowed it, right? Because they're saying, well, you should have had appraisals. You need to have the date that you received it, the purchase price, all this. Well, he didn't purchase it. He inherited it. So at that point, the value would have been what the value was at the time that he contributed, because that was pretty much the same value that we're arguing, because obviously he didn't buy it from new. And so there is no loss. It wasn't a business asset. So it wasn't listed on some sort of business tax return or anything. It's really just the matter that it was on there. And since it was every little individual, we're talking thousands of things he gave away, loads and loads. And he was very documented when he did it. And so they're basically saying, well, without an appraisal, we can't give you any of it. And it, you know, so we're obviously there is ways around this and we're still having very strong discussions. But we have to learn from what he did to make sure that if you have inherited and you're donating and you're wanting to deduct those donations, your best bet in doing that would be actually having an appraisal or something come through. And I know there's a cost to that, but when you consider tax bracket, you know, if he's even in the 10% tax bracket, he saved roughly $8,000 in taxes if he was able to itemize. It would have been worth having this appraisal. Now, in his defense, I wouldn't have even known that myself. I mean, I know when it's a piece of art or it's a car or something big, sure, we always get appraisals for those. I would have never thought about all the little pieces of furniture and clothing and all that that was in a house and a barn that would have needed to be appraised. So just putting that out there, if you're an individual that may be going through that right now and you're thinking, oh my gosh, you know, there's just a ton of stuff here, and common sense would be is, hey, I'm gonna give it to Goodwill. Part, you want to have someone actually repurpose it, but two, why not deduct it from your taxes? And that's why you, if you do it, there's no reason you can't. The problem is you need to do it in a right way. And, you know, what one person learns, we pass to the other. So the important part of that conversation really is, if you're in that kind of situation where you've got a household of furniture and different things, maybe you can call in an appraiser that will come in and you know, either document it for you, maybe even have like an auction versus doing the donations, but it's more like a large garage sale kind of situation. He wasn't looking to have any money come back from it. He really was just looking to repurpose it into a someplace that could do something with it. So, you know, that's the situation, but just putting that out there that it's a little bit unique. Sometimes you don't have. And I want to also bring up that the IRS has pretty much come down and, you know, for all of you that have short-term rentals, those are going to be switching to Schedule C's if you haven't already done that. It's already been proven in court and everything else. The IRS is looking at all short-term rentals as Schedule C's. Some of us have done them on Schedule E's, in all honesty, because people weren't managing themselves. They were having managers and everything else being done, but they are moving those to a Schedule C. So again, if you're on a short-term rental, those need to be moved to Schedule C's, which is a pro and con. I mean, if you're losing money on it, it's a good thing because theoretically you don't have the same limitations as a Schedule E does. But if you're making money on it, you will pay additional tax because you'll pay self-employment tax if you're not already maxed out on Social Security and Medicare. Well, you can't max out on Medicare, but Social Security. So it's one of those conversations you do need to have with your tax person and make sure you're moving in that right direction. That's definitely something we're seeing coming down through the audits where people win or lose. Sometimes it's actually a good audit because we actually were able to take losses that they weren't able to. But in most cases, that's not the case. So we're going to take our second break here in just a second. The phone lines are open, 615-737-9986. I'm sure many of you guys are out there right now. This is a sales tax-free weekend. I would be out there if I wasn't on the radio. You need to, you know, make sure you bulk up on all the things that you can qualify for, and we'll cover that and just come back. I'll go over what some of the things you could be buying, making sure, because here in Tennessee, that's 9.25 to 9.75 free money, you know, almost 10%. That's a pretty healthy rebate, let's put it that way, or deduction. So that if we're not paying sales tax, it's a good time. Kids are getting ready to start school. So we're going to come back. The phone number here in the studio is 615-737-9986. 615-737-9986. We'll be right back with the Dr. Friday Show.
Your Money Code. Coach with Dr. Friday will return in a moment on Supertalk 99.7 WTN.
All righty, we are back here live in studio. And before we get to what we can do for the sales tax-free weekend, let's go to Ron in Manchester. Appreciate the phone call. Ron, what's happening?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
I understand that the governor has signed a reduction in the Tennessee franchise tax.
Right.
I've missed this. Can you?
Sure. I'll give you a quick overview of what he did or what they had done wrong, because basically it was a court case that required them to do this. But anyways, basically they were taxing net worth or Schedule G, which Schedule G was where we would list the assets, your inventory, your rent, and they multiplied that by 10.
Right.
And they were basically coming out with a number and seeing which of, they're taxing you at the higher number. So it'd be that Schedule G or your net worth. Now, some people didn't put their net worth in, but we're doing Schedule G. So now what we have to do, we can go back from 2020 up to 2023, and we can request, we have to go back in, amend the returns, making sure that we have a Schedule G. And then you have to attach a balance sheet to justify your net worth. And then they have to approve the refund, and then you have to go through a refund process once those have been done. It's not quite as simple as they like to make it sound when it was coming through, but it is working. And I will tell you, my bigger companies, obviously they were paying a lot more money. Many of them were reporting net worth and still paying more tax on Schedule G, so they are getting decent refunds. But most of my smaller companies, many of them, because they were Schedule C's on their, you know, like a single member LLC, net worth wasn't really being reported. Therefore, the Schedule G. And so when we reverse it, it's not finding a huge refund, but they sent a letter out, Ron, to everyone, like you may be entitled to a refund. And, you know, obviously not everyone's going to get a refund, and not everyone actually has working balance sheets. So it's requiring them to get some accounting work done to accomplish it.
Thank you so much.
No problem. That's a great question. Thanks for calling. I appreciate you. And so, yeah, I will just put out there for all business owners, Ron, being on there. But basically, if you haven't, we only have till the end of the year to basically apply for this. So it can't hurt to go in, amend. I have some that come back as zero. But, you know, every dollar counts in this world, so it's always a good thing to do it. And if you need help, our firm can help you get to that point and get that squared away. Okay, now back to an exciting weekend for all of us. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, if I'm correct. Yes, Friday, it basically started at 12:01 a.m. Friday, and it will end at midnight on Sunday. We have a tax-free weekend. Here's what applies. General apparel for $100 or less per an item. So shirts, pants, socks, shoes, dresses, etc. Any piece of item that is more than $100 is not exempt. You will pay sales tax. Items sold together, such as shoes. You can't say, well, each shoe is $50 or $75, so therefore they're under. It's a pair. You can't change that. You can't split up anything. If it's $100, it's either $100 or it's over $100. Same thing for items such as jewelry, handbags, sporting, and recreational equipment. They do not apply in this situation. This is basically true back to school, things that you need. Not to say that I'm sure new bats and some of that may come into play. Art supplies purchased for $100 or less per an item, such as binders, backpacks, crayons, pens, pencils, rulers, et cetera, drawing pads, all of that is exempt as long as each item is less than $100. School and art supplies individually priced at more than $100 per an item is not exempt. Items that are normally sold together cannot be split. Again, if you're buying a package of something that is usually all sold together, but now it cannot be split up. It has to be per an item that is packaged that way. Computers for personal use, $1,500 or less, qualify for no sales tax. Come on, that's almost $150 we would have paid in sales tax. That is where you need to be looking. Laptop computers, if priced at $15 or less, qualify, as well as tablet computers. That's wonderful. Storage, media fields, flash drives, compact discs, do not qualify. Individual purchase software, do not qualify. Printer supplies, do not qualify. Does it say that you can actually, I'm not sure. I mean, it doesn't say printers qualify. Household appliances do not qualify. It specifically says computer for personal use or laptop computers or tablets. So those are definitely things that would be things you would want to look at. This is a perfect, come on. We live in one of the highest states for sales tax. So this is, I mean, if you're spending $1,000 in school clothes, you just saved $100. That simple. Some of the things that may not qualify, you know, just be smart. I mean, jewelry, things that are accessories, you know, ski clothes. I don't know. That's what they have on this list. Not too sure. We don't have a lot of skiing here in Tennessee. But obviously, all the other things, even a wedding gown, if it's $100 or less, that's interesting. I would have thought that was not a school thing. But there's a whole list if you have questions. Most of the places you shop are going to have it already marked and set up for you. So it's not going to be something you have to walk in with. But, you know, all the essentials, definitely a good time to go online. And there's no reason you couldn't go online and do your shopping as well as going out. You know, I mean, again, if you have a bunch of office supplies that you want to buy or school supplies, you know, binders, pencils, pens, markers, crayons, whatever, you know, just order them online and get them shipped. As long as you do it before tomorrow at midnight, you qualify for the sales tax free weekend. And I would definitely put some serious thought into whatever it is that you basically are going to want, because that way then you don't have to play too much with it. All right, let's get John before the next break if we can. John from Cookeville, that way he doesn't have to wait through. Hey, John.
Hey, Dr. Friday, enjoy your show. Good job, girl. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for calling. What can I do for you?
Okay, got a friend of mine asked this question to me, and I could not answer it. I'm in the insurance financial planning business and do some trust work, and he asked this question. I thought, oh, that's a good one. He is 64. He draws Social Security. Him and his wife earned about, I think he said he earned $94,000 himself last year, unusual year. His wife earns about $40,000 with Social Security and so forth. So they went over the $100,000 mark. He started drawing Social Security, and he's not 65 yet. Does he have to, if he goes drawing Social Security, does he have to pay any of that Social Security back?
Yes, but it depends on how he earned the money. So you can't earn more than like $20,000 if you're on what we call early Social Security, which he is, until he hits his actual 66 and a half, 67, whatever his full retirement is. So, yeah. But what you were talking about doesn't sound like he wasn't working a job. He was drawing Social Security and maybe taking money from his retirement.
No, it was income money.
Oh, I mean, he did go out and work.
If it was a 1099, yeah, the work he does, he gets a 1099 at the end of the year. Yes.
So, yeah. So if his profit on that 1099 is over the $20,000, he will have to pay back $1 for every $2 over that 20. And there's, I don't know the exact number. Let's just call it 21,000 to be safe. So if he made $40,000, theoretically, he'll be paying back $1 of every $2 over. So he'll be paying a big chunk of money back.
Okay.
That's what I don't like about early Social Security.
So they would stop his Social Security then, right? That's what he's worried about.
Pretty much they will. I mean, he'll have to pay it back, which means they're going to keep his Social Security for the next year because he's going to be paying back the year before where he took it. And so until he hits full retirement, it's almost, I mean, if he's going to continue working anyways, I mean, this may have been an unusual year, but
it was. Yeah, it was. Yeah. Okay,
yeah,
very good.
And I don't know.
Question.
Yeah. Is him and his wife both worked the business, or it was just him? Because obviously, if they both worked, it'd be 20 on each of them roughly. But yeah, I mean, if this was an unusual year, unfortunately, he should, you know, it's always easy. You see it all the time. I'm sure, John, same thing I do. One of those questions would have been a good one to ask his tax person. while it was happening. So you could have either stopped the Social Security, you know, just so you don't have to pay it back. And, you know, go, but that's hindsight. And, you know, at this point he's going to end up with a situation where he's going to possibly owe some decent money, and they're either going to take his Social Security every month as the payback, or I mean, they send you a bill basically. And so you'll have to pay it back or pay it through your Social Security, you know, depending on his situation.
Right. Well, he has his taxes done up. I think this is correct, through a tax person. It's not a CPA. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, they'll get back with you. And that's when he called me about 2 weeks ago. And I said, I've got to get back with him. But it was about 2 weeks ago. And so, yeah, I don't know if his person does.
Hopefully his tax person got back with him and they made a plan to move forward, because it's nothing worse than getting that, you know, I mean. Again, he may have gotten lucky and just had a really good year and didn't have any expectation of that happening. But
I think that's what happened. Yeah. So does he need to call Social Security? You think he'd advise him to do that?
Well, I mean, if this was in 2024 that's happened, or do you think it was a 23 issue?
23.
Well, then they're going to be notified because he's filed his taxes. So he's going to be getting a love letter relatively soon.
Okay. And here's something else he done. He filed extension.
Yeah. Well, that means he hasn't, I mean, he needs to go ahead and file his taxes, but his tax person also needs to help him try to figure out roughly what the bill can be. So he's not going to be given a huge surprise at that time. Right. I mean, I'm just saying he needs somebody that's going to prepare him for it, because there's nothing worse than getting a bill from the government for, you know, $5,000-$10,000. I mean, depending on his profit and what it is, but he has till October 15th to file, but I'm assuming he's still drawing Social Security today.
I would think he probably is. I don't know, but I can ask him. Yeah. Yeah. He is,
if this year is going to be as good or even close to as good as it was, then he may, you know, I'm just saying he's going to end up eventually having to pay it back. So he needs to have a plan. I always think a plan is a good plan.
Yes, ma'am. Hey, love the show.
Well, thank you, Doc. Thanks. I appreciate the phone call, John.
Yes, ma'am. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye. All right. We're going to take our last break. If you want to join the show, you can. 615-737-9986. 615-737-9986. We'll be right back with the Dr. Friday Show.
Your Money Coach with Dr. Friday will return in a moment on Super Talk 99.7 WTN.
All righty, we are back live here on the radio, and it looks like we've got a few phone callers, which I appreciate. Let's hit John first for the early retirement. Maybe my boy, what can I do for you, John?
Thanks for taking my call. I do have to follow up a little bit on your last caller. I'm about to retire, and I'm going to have a little over 40 years, but I'm not reached 62 yet. My thinking is, what my question is, if I take early retirement at 62, my Social Security at 62, is my retirement pension, does it count towards income?
No.
Or can I?
That's what I was trying to make sure with that last caller. So it's really truly earning. So 1099 W-2, that's the ones that affect the payback of 2-to-1. So you'll be fine if you have a pension and your Social Security, they're not going to take any. I mean, there's no penalty for that.
Great, great. Well, thank you so much for your information. I greatly appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for the phone call. I appreciate you. All right, let's hit Bobby in Fairview. Bobby in Fairview, what you got going for me, buddy? Oops, I'm a little faster than my radio guy here. Bobby in Fairview? Not too sure. Okay, I'm not too sure. Hold on, Bobby. Don't hang up. I'm not too sure why we're... Oh, there we go. Hey, Bobby, what's happening?
All right, ma'am. My wife owned a wedding dress shop in Fairview, or is in Dixon. But anyway, they closed up shop and tried to liquidate. We got stuck with about $50,000 roughly in inventory. Are having trouble moving that inventory and... just wonder if there's like a good option to claim that on taxes, since we can't or haven't been able to sell it to this point.
Right. So you'll have to be a little bit more tenacious on that one, because the $50,000 would be either your cost, which is what we consider $50,000 in inventory, but it may also be what the market price would have been. So you're only going to be able, and then did they already deduct that from the business as a loss? Because it's, if they've closed the doors, they may have already just wrote it off, and therefore there's no value to it because the loss came through the business. Or if the business is still basically holding on, trying to get rid of this last $50,000, then the best bet is donate the dresses, clean out the, I mean, obviously that's a nice thing to say. I don't know financially how that will work for us, but you could, you know, donate or give them, and then that money, then the cost of whatever those dresses cost, you'd be able to deduct as a loss on the business.
Okay. Yeah. I don't think that she, you know, claimed it yet. And
right.
I know that
she's still trying to get a value
cost
out of them. Yeah.
Right. It's her cost. It's not the retail price.
Okay.
But her cost
that's a lot of money to take a loss on. I mean, in all honesty,
right.
Hopefully she can do something with them. But, you know, if she can't, then obviously close, final tax return, zero out inventory, donate to, you know, one of those places or whatever, and see if that will at least give you some, it will give you some tax loss, which will give you some tax dollars back.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you.
Cool. Thanks, Bobby. Thanks for holding. All right. Let's hit Randy real quick in Alexandra. 1031 exchange, as I call it. Hey, Randy, what's happening?
Hey, Dr. Friday. Good to talk to you again.
Sure.
The question is, my wife and I, we have it's a little over 100 acre piece of property in an area that's not near our house, and not necessarily wanting to sell it all, but maybe some of it and buy another piece of property closer to where we live and maybe in the area we want to live, let me just say that, which is near where we live, and build maybe another house or something. How could I make that work? I mean, if I didn't sell it all, or do you have to sell it all? Can you just kind of go over how 1031 transfer?
You got a couple moving parts there, Randy. First thing is, yes, you can sell 1 acre to whatever number you want, probably depending on the capital gains. Do we determine the 1031? I mean, obviously you paid so much for them, but let's just assume that you're going to make a profit of $50,000 to $100,000. Then a 1031 would be a good suggestion. 1031 cannot be used to buy your primary home. So a 1031 would be dirt for dirt in this situation. So you can sell 20 acres, go buy 100 acres, whatever, you know, you don't have to buy the same number, but the idea would be is to sell the acreage on the side that you may not want to be dealing with, and then to invest onto the land on the side of town that you might actually be able to do what you want to do, either that being farming or whatever. I mean, it's dirt, doesn't have to be doing anything. And then that would be the main thing. You cannot make it your primary home, though, for a minimum of 2 years. 1031 exchanges have to be. And then there's some loops you have to jump through, and eventually you'd actually have to pay the capital gain. So I guess my question would be on that one. Normally a primary home is 5 acres and a house. So if you're getting a larger piece of land, potentially, maybe that can be farmland or whatever. Obviously, 15 acres or more is always a good idea for the greenbelt. But that's, again, may or may not come into conversation, but I'm just saying for tax purposes.
Okay. So, but it does have to be acre for acre. Is that correct?
No, it doesn't. No, you can sell 1 acre and buy 100. No, does not have to be. It's just basically dirt for dirt.
Okay. So does that transfer as far as all of the, not transfer, but defer the taxes?
If you do a 1031, yes. But if you sell a piece of property for $100,000, you have to go spend $100,000.
Right. Okay.
No matter what your profit was, for whatever it sells for, you have to spend.
On another piece of property, either large.
On another piece of property, yes.
And there's a 2-year holdback on building a home on it, correct?
Primary home, yes. And then you still have to pay the capital gain. So I think if you have a taxer, we'd have to talk a little bit more about what's the advantage or disadvantage, at least to the 5 acres where you're going to build the house compared to a 1031 on the other dirt, right? It's not primary, the dirt for dirt. So just saying.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, that gives me some information to talk about.
Cool. Great question. Thanks for calling. All right, guys, we're winding down the show here. We're getting down to the last couple of minutes. So let's just go through all the important information, like how can you reach my office on Monday morning if you've got a question or you weren't able to get through or you're out shopping and you're like, oh, I wanted to go all, but I'm out shopping, right? 615-367-0819 is my phone number, 615-367-0819. You can also email friday@drfriday.com, friday@drfriday.com. You can also go onto the web, drfriday.com, and just, you know, check out who I am. You may not know. I am an enrolled agent licensed by the Internal Revenue Service, which means I do not work for the Internal Revenue Service. I am licensed by them to do representation, basically to help put a shield between you and the IRS so you have someone there that can actually kind of talk the same language, making sure that we can do our very best to represent you, making sure that things are going the way they should, and also to explain why the IRS is doing what they've done. Because sometimes people are all like, why? Sometimes it's simple errors, and sometimes it's because they're interpreting something differently than the way you interpreted it, and maybe it's even just a matter of getting them on the same page. I've had some really unique situations where someone may have sold a house and it ended up reporting twice on their taxes, and therefore the IRS was trying to collect it twice, even though it was the same exact house. These kind of things happen. The biggest thing is making sure you got the communication or you have someone there that's going to help represent you. Had a situation yesterday where someone was telling me we couldn't e-file 2021, but yet we can e-file 2021. So, you know, IRS is not always right, but it is important that they're on the same page as where we are, because otherwise you're going to be spending a lot of time going in circles. And sometimes it's, you know, it's too late to make certain recommendations. Sometimes we have to do reconsiderations, hoping that we can get an audit reopened because something didn't get done the first time. But there are ways of working with the IRS. It is their job to help make this work, not necessarily just be a collection firm. But again, if you want to call us Monday morning, you can at 615-367-0819. Email is Friday, just like the day of the week, at drfriday.com, friday@drfriday.com. You can check out the web, drfriday.com, and that way you make sure that you've got all the information you need to make sure you know what the next steps are, that you're not just spinning your wheels trying, and hopefully those love letters aren't accumulating in the drawer. As we always say, call you later.